This episode contains spoilers for Crazy Stupid Love, as well as some strong language, including asshole. You've been warned. That's a movie joke, by the way. We hope that if you're okay with that language and scarlet lettering and drinking vodka cranberries, then enjoy the show.
So what's next? What's your big move?
You're not ready for my big move.
What do you mean? Just tell me. What's your big move?
No, come on. You couldn't handle the big move.
Just tell me.
All right. All right. You know the podcast, Movie Mixology with Pat and Marissa Gibbons?
Yeah.
I work it into the conversation. I tell them I'm a co-host of that podcast. And they always want to come podcast with me.
And that works?
It works every time. All right. So with that, let's go ahead and get into it, shall we? As stated, this is Movie Mixology with Pat and Marissa Gibbons. It's a podcast for amateur bartenders and movie lovers alike, where every week we take a drink from a film or inspired by a film, and we enjoy it and the film both very, very greatly.
Woot!
And I'm your host, Pat.
I'm Marissa.
And today we are drinking vodka cranberries, one of the simplest, most universal drinks, but it's so beloved universally and ubiquitous for a reason. It's tasty. It's crisp. It's got that, you know, nice tartness to it. And it's from the film from 2011 that inspired a million comedies-esque-ish, right, since then, from the early 2010s into the new decade, 2020s. Crazy Stupid Love, starring Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone. All right. I'm going to take a breath. And what else should we say in this long, drawn-out intro?
Other than that, I just think it's notable that this movie has pretty good critical reviews for a comedy slash romance. Some might even call it a rom-com. It has a 7.4 on IMDb, and it has a 79% critical rating on Rotten Tomatoes, 78% audience rating. So I think that's pretty unique. It kind of reminds me of when we were looking at When Harry Met Sally and how that had pretty high ratings as well. Whereas a lot of other rom-coms, especially ones that came out, I want to say just before this one from like 2000 to 2010, just all kind of got really bad reviews. a lot of those romantic comedies were not, you know, I think the script wasn't as good as this one. The performances weren't as good. I mean, some of them are still fun to watch, but this one really sticks out in my mind is, you know, I remember when I went to see this in theaters and I thought, wow, that was like really funny and good, way more than it, you know, had a right to be. And I remember just saying that was so great. And I've watched it a lot of times since then because every time it just makes me laugh and smile. So I, you know, personally have always really enjoyed watching this movie. So I'm glad that we're talking about it.
You know, this movie has some special significance to us because I think you showed it to me for the first time, despite the fact that it came out, you know, 5-6 years before we met. I had never seen it. I had seen all the memes about it, but I think, you know, just not really wanting to engage. I was kind of feeling like, you know, at that point in my life, like I didn't really want to watch comedies like that with any sort of you know, overt star power that wasn't raunchy, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean, like the comedies that were popular when I was coming up were like, you know, Anchorman and Hangover, and I've probably said that a million times on this podcast, so if you're keeping track, take a drink. I love those comedies, right? But you know, as I got older, I came to appreciate this movie because it's very clever. It's the whole premise behind, you know, the movie long joke, if you will, you know, the one that like it teases and then eventually the payoff. It's like the setup of a very long joke. I love it. And I think it's a great film. We're going to talk about it now. Let's talk briefly, though, about the scene with the vodka cranberry. Real quick for the recipe. All you need is some cranberry juice, vodka, and maybe some lime and lime juice. Actually, I don't know if that's official, but that's how we made it. You take basically 1 to 2 ounces of vodka in a cup full of ice. Then you top it with cranberries, squirt some freshly squeezed lime juice in there and stir, and then you garnish with lime. That is it. That's how we made ours.
Yeah. So the vodka cranberry is featured in this movie because Steve Carell's character, Cal, he is a man who's going through a divorce, and he's really, his whole life is just kind of turned around because of this, and it's an unexpected happening in his life. And so he starts frequenting a local bar a lot, and you know, he's kind of down in the dumps, and he keeps ordering a vodka cranberries at the bar. You know, we first see when the bartender asks him if he'd like another vodka cranberry, and he's going to this bar night after night, just kind of not really interacting with people. But then when he does interact with them, he kind of just says his sob story, you know, as Ryan Gosling calls it. He tells him that he's going through divorce. You know, he has these kids. His wife slept with another guy, David Lindhagen. It just becomes kind of like it's sad, but it becomes like a recurring joke, right? So finally, you know, Ryan Gosling's character, who's set up to be this person who also frequents the bar, Jacob, but is more of this like womanizing guy who just goes there to pick up women all the time. He sees Cal, you know, because they're both there a lot, and he calls Cal over and basically tells him, like, you know, stop what you're doing. Just stop. Like, I can't take this anymore. Why are you drinking all these vodka cranberries? He makes a couple jokes about him drinking vodka cranberries. It's very funny because he's like, you know, if you're here to pick up on women, drinking that is not going to, you know, get them to come near you. Also, telling these sob stories is not going to get them to come near you. And then Ryan Gosling's character, Jacob, ultimately asks Cal if he wants to give him basically like a makeover and recover his manhood and help him, you know. He's like, you know, do you have any idea when you lost your manhood or about what year? So yeah, that's a long explanation, but this drink is featured in all of those kind of bar scenes and is kind of used as a funny way to show how this Cal character, quote, you know, is in need of this sort of makeover. And when you think about it, of course, it's definitely sort of sexist. I think guys or girls can enjoy vodka cranberries, and that joke is obviously like meant for laughs and stuff like that. But I think that ultimately it kind of shows the point of how Ryan Gosling at first perceives Cal as sort of this weak guy, but then later, ironically or not ironically, he learns a lot from Cal, and Jacob actually wants to be more like Cal, a family man who's a good man. And so I think that kind of idea of casting Cal in this weak light kind of comes around, and by the end Jacob's like, you know what, maybe I do want to be the kind of guy that drinks vodka cranberries.
Yeah, it really is like a master or student becomes the master on both ends. Mm-hmm. kind of a dynamic. And yeah, I think it's hilarious the way that it is presented, because, you know, he is weak by those standards. I think the Cal character does have to go through, like, you know, a strengthening of sorts, because that's kind of what the movie's about. Maybe not necessarily does he have to get stronger in the player department, right? But he does have to become, you know, mentally and emotionally more resilient, because that's how he ultimately wins back his family. So with that in mind, this feel-good story, we're going to go ahead and get into our three things that we have to discuss about Crazy Stupid Love. There's probably more than that, but we're just going to limit it to three in our first segment, Triple Shot.
It's time for Triple Shot.
All right. So I think you went first last time, Marissa. So I'm going to go ahead and go first this time around, if that's okay. The entire final set piece. So the reason, and I alluded to this at the beginning, we're going to go right into it because it kind of makes this movie.
No spoilers. Spoilers. Really, this is a big spoiler if you haven't seen it.
The final set piece of, you know, the whole misunderstanding and the joke paying off of simultaneously Emma Stone is Cal Weaver's daughter, and also the older man that Jessica is in love with is actually Cal. Like, all of that could have been totally avoided. I'm going to nitpick this movie and my only, like, critique, quote-unquote, of it right off the bat, because I do really love it. I just wanted to get this off my chest. This whole movie suspends on one tiny little oversight, which is, like, in the first, like, few minutes, shortly after getting divorced, Cal drives Jessica back home. And he's, like, not listening to her. He's just kind of, like, you know, zoned out. It's clear from the camera angles that the character is supposed to be, you know, not paying attention. He's thinking about David Lindhagen. He's like, David Lindhagen? God, you know? And he's just kind of talking to himself. Meanwhile, Jessica is like enamored with him and, you know, she's not really paying attention or doesn't really understand the dynamic of what's happening. All she knows is, you know, because she's young and impressionable, like, I should just tell him that I think your wife is batshit crazy, quote, unquote. And at one point, I'm like, she says something along the lines of, you know, I just think you're so nice. And I know that I'm like, you know, kind of young. You know, she says something that is ironically kind of similar to what, you know, Steve Carell's son,
Robbie,
says to him, right? Or says to her, says to Jessica. She basically takes that explanation of like, I know that we're, you know, that you're older than me, but, you know, I'm more mature than I look, you know. that same kind of argument she kind of throws at him. And he's just completely oblivious to it. You know, he's not paying attention to that at all. And I think that's super interesting because, you know, you would think that if he's got an adult daughter who went through teenagehood, he would know, you know, to pick up signs. And you can make the argument that he's too busy thinking about recently getting divorced. But without that happening, then none of the other scenes would have happened because he probably would have confronted, you know, her and been like, yo, it's okay. You know, and he would have talked to the parents of her. They, you know, Jessica's parents, played by John Carroll Lynch and Annalee Tipton. Annalee Tipton is Jessica Riley, played by
Beth Littleford.
Yeah, John Carroll Lynch and Beth Littleford. And I just think that that's kind of like the weakest part of the movie is that the whole final scene depends on that. But that being said, especially the first time you watch it and you're not nitpicking and looking for stuff like that, you're just along for the ride. And that last scene comes in and hits you. And it's so great how it's executed because, you know, it's just joke after joke after joke after payoff after payoff, and doesn't make it any less enjoyable. Just think that the movie logic to set it up is kind of tough after several watches.
I feel like that last scene, I mean, maybe it's just because I always pay most attention or laugh the most at the realization that Jacob is dating Hannah and the interaction between him and Cal where, you know, when Hannah says, oh, this is my boyfriend, and Cal's like, no, he's not. And they keep going back and forth like, wait, this is your dad? Wait, how do you two know each other? I'm always paying more attention to that. And then I think the storyline and with the neighbor girl, Jess, kind of definitely like tries to force its way in there. And I kind of agree with you in that that's kind of like a weaker part of the movie for me, because I think that while that is like a very accurate storyline, I think that young girls often fall for like older men or get crushes on, you know, people because they're like, oh, this is like a mature, you know, that's part of every, I think, young girl's life. And then every young guy obviously falls for older women too, whether it be babysitters or teachers or whatever. So it can be like funny and stuff, I think. But I think, like you said at the beginning, when she's kind of keeps trying to tell him like, oh, I have feelings for you and whatnot, and he's just not even paying attention, I actually think that that's fairly accurate. I mean, he has this guy who's obviously very clueless, so clueless that he didn't even know his wife had slept with someone else, so clueless that, you know, he doesn't have a firm grasp really on his family life anymore. I believe that if this, you know, teenage girl was saying something kind of wacky to him, he wouldn't even process it. He would just, you know, not even realize. I think there are clueless people like that. And I think that's part of what Jacob tries to bring to Cal, is like a more of a sense of his present and presence and being present and being in the moment, you know, rather than just kind of fumbling about as Cal does. And so I kind of believe that he has no idea and doesn't really, you know, pick up on what even Jessica is saying in that moment.
Actually, now that you say that, I think you're right, because this man is literally sitting in a bar being like, you know what a cuckold is?
Yeah.
David Lindhagen cuckolded me. He made a cuckold out of, and like no self-awareness whatsoever.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for, the phrase, no self-awareness. And so
I think you're right.
But yeah, it is, like you said, that is a major joke that they play by bringing in all these different players into that last scene, including Jessica and her parents and the big misunderstanding that they have, as well as the sort of surprise shock between about Jacob and Hannah dating. There's so many names to keep track of here. Yeah, I think that all of that together is really funny. I think they could have, I'm trying to think of, you know, the last scene, if they didn't do the Jessica joke and they just had in there about the reveal that Jacob was dating Hannah and Hannah was actually Cal's daughter. Cal even had a daughter. I feel like that joke still would have probably been just as funny, but then you wouldn't get the dad running in and tackling Steve Carell.
Yeah.
So that adds like another layer of humor, I guess, the kind of physical humor of that scene. And they all end up on top of each other because they just won't like communicate. I think all of that kind of builds. I was one of my shots was kind of be kind of to talk about that whole scene. So since we're already kind of talking about it, I'll just say real quickly that I think that that last scene, and like I was saying, the reveal about the two dating and that Hannah is Cal's daughter is
Hannah Banana.
Yeah, is so funny and so smart. And like the first time I saw this, I didn't really get that at all. Like I didn't guess that. And I also think that that whole scene kind of, I actually laugh out loud a bunch of times during that scene. And I think that elevates this movie from like a good comedy to a great comedy. And I love, you know, you just feel the tense, you know, nature between Cal and Jacob and how Hannah and Emily have like no idea what's going on or how they know each other.
But right. Emily's literally blindfolded.
Yeah. Yes. And us in the audience, we know what's going on. And also they said at the perfect time, because it's when Cal's finally like, oh, I'm, you know, kind of got his groove back and he's like, oh, I'm going to do this nice thing for my wife. And you kind of are in that mode. And then just out of nowhere, you're like, oh, like crap. I didn't even think about that. Why is Emma Stone even in this movie? Oh, because she's their daughter. Like, duh, why didn't I think of that? But they do a really good job of making you think that Nana, the person that, you know, Cal and his wife keep talking about, is like a grandma or something.
Yeah.
You don't clue into like, oh, that's Emma Stone's character that they keep referencing.
Yep. And like all the little like breadcrumbs that they're leaving, like even her cake at the Josh Groban party for her, where you think he's gonna propose, but then he offers her a job. like it's a banana cake.
Yeah.
You know, they do such a good job of like setting that stuff up and making you not do it. It's like a really good sleight of hand trick. Mm-hmm. You know, you're so busy watching this hand, you're not even looking at this one. And
yeah,
for the listeners, I just, you know, held up both hands. So yeah, I love that scene. I also love, I think my favorite part of that scene is when a Gosling, like David Lindhagen, yeah, comes into the picture and just Kevin Bacon's comedic timing
adds a fourth layer,
another great, yeah, layer. Just like, you forgot your shawl at my house, implying that they've been together. And he just goes, David Lindhagen, you're David Lindhagen? And then he just takes off his ring. And it's just like, man, what? Even in spite of like all the craziness, like, what a homie.
Yeah.
He's just got Cal's back. And I just think that that was expertly done. And then, yeah, of course, all the other stuff is supplementary to that. But yeah, the main payoff, the punchline of that is the Emma Stone being his daughter, and then him just be, like he says something, like Gosling says something so funny, his delivery, where he's just like, I want to die or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't catch that the first few times I saw it, but I caught it this time and it made it even funnier. So great scene. It's what makes this movie special, like you said, and one of the reasons we wanted to cover it on the show.
Yeah.
So we just had kind of a combined shot there, but I don't want to be greedy and hog the spotlight. What is your first shot?
So I think that I want to talk a little bit about what we parodied in our opening scene, and that is the scene when Ryan Gosling's character Jacob and Emma Stone's character Hannah finally sort of get together, but they get together in a sense that is like kind of surprising and sweet. So I want to talk about
that. They don't have sex.
Yeah. I want to talk about that. Well, the first night that they meet. I want to talk about the whole scene from, or not meet, when she goes. So I guess it would be the second time they meet. But anyways, she decides, you know, that she doesn't want to be with this boring guy anymore who doesn't really have an interest in being with her anyways. And she decides, you know what, I'm going to go do something kind of reckless and I'm going to go get with the hot guy, what she calls from the bar.
Hot guy from the bar.
And, you know, she storms in. It's really funny. And she basically tells Jacob that, you know, come on, we're getting out of here. Rest in peace, the woman who he was talking to at the bar before. But he's like, yeah, okay, I'll go with you. And, you know, from the moment they get to his apartment or home, it becomes like one big joke because, you know, everything is just kind of like really nice and over the top. And, you know, she's joking about how like, I've never done this before. I'm going to need a couple drinks and that, you know, oh, you have this great body and now I don't want to take my shirt off. And it's just like a bunch of funny jokes and Emma Stone's really funny. Then she kind of says like, well, what do you do next? Like, I'm not used to this sort of pickup thing. And eventually Jacob reveals that he does the dirty dancing move, which is a great rom-com thing, is rom-coms that reference other rom-coms. But in this one, it's again, like really funny. But then it turns into like romantic when he actually does do the lift for her. And then you think, okay, they're going to go have sex. But then when they get into the bed, they have just such great chemistry that they start laughing and just can't stop like talking to each other and laughing. And then, you know, she goes and sits in his massage chair because that's a joke. And then they just start talking to each other about their lives and opening up to each other in just such a natural way. And I think that's what I liked most about this scene, starting from the scene at the bar to when ultimately she puts the blanket on him because he's fallen asleep. Mm-hmm. Just the natural progression from the all those moments you're watching it, you just feel like, wow, this feels so natural and these two have such great chemistry. And it's also very sweet. Like that whole long series of scenes, I think, showing these two, you just think, wow, that's like such a beautifully directed series of scenes and a progression of this night that these two shared. And you can really see the connection between them unfold. And then you can understand why, you know, Jacob suddenly feels like, wow, I really feel something very strong for this person. And so does Hannah. And you can really feel that because the way that it's shown and acted through that, you know, progression of their night together.
I love that scene, especially because, like you said, their chemistry is top tier. And I mean, so much so that they've made multiple movies together, right?
This is true.
I mean, it's undeniable. They just play off each other so freaking well. And it was part of the marketing of this movie, undoubtedly. That scene works really well because it seems like a really real conversation somebody would have. And, you know, I don't know if every guy out there can do the Patrick Swayze dirty dancing move as a pickup, you know, or that every woman would be like, you know, totally down for that, right? But I think that the organicness of, you know,
teasing each other
because they both are kind of realizing, oh, there's more to this than just a physical attraction, right? That evolves really nicely throughout that scene. And then you kind of believe at the end. I think it pays dividends in the scene where after the big, you know, joke reveal scene, the twist scene, when Jacob goes to meet Cal at the same bar, but this time he comes like as an ambassador, basically like, you know, I want you to talk to your daughter and, you know, I want to keep going out with her. And he's just like being, no, this is, no, no. He's just being very indignant. And then he's like, I'm never going to give you my approval. And then Jacob goes, you know, like, you're a good father, rather than like lash out or do anything. And it shows that, you know, in just such a short time, and this is, I think, some people's issue with this movie, but not mine. I've just seen this complaint levied. That seems like that character development from like that scene that we're talking about to all the way to you're a good father, Cal, is just really sudden. But I think the argument against that is that they definitely show that there's like a passage of time, like several weeks to several months in between those, where he finally starts to like realize, you know, okay, maybe I found somebody that's special.
I agree. You know, I think that it shows that there's a passage of time, which, you know, because Cal keeps calling him, like saying, hey, Jacob, where are you? Didn't see you at the bar. And I feel like that's more than most movies would ever give you. Usually these characters, like, they're one scene, they're doing something, and then like 1 hour passes, and the next they're doing something.
Character turns on a dime.
Yeah. So I think whoever complains about, no, I'm just kidding. I think I can understand that, though, because you spend so much time with these characters and, you know, it seems like Jacob's one way and then he's one way at the end of the movie. But I agree with you that I think they do a good job of showing not only why he changes, because he meets someone who he realizes he wants to change that part of his life, but also the passage of time kind of helps him mature in that way. You know, those two things together is, I think, well done. And yeah, so what is your second shot?
So my second shot is actually going to be also a little nitpicky. I kind of thought this the first time that I saw the movie, but I definitely felt it more strongly with each subsequent rewatch. The final act, really, like the last, if you want to call it like the final few scenes, basically after Your Good Father, Cal, to the end. That includes the speech. That includes Jessica giving Robbie her nudes, you know, which is problematic.
Yeah.
And then all of that stuff, Steve Carell interrupting the speech to give his own speech. It doesn't really work for me as much as I would like it to, which is a damn shame, because I think it would make this movie go from like a 7 to like an 8 or a 9 if I... You know, if I had something to really be invested with other than just like cheesy indie movie ending, which it kind of feels like to me. And then, of course, you know how I feel about cringe comedy. I mean, I think that the whole idea of Robbie giving a, you know, we're all fucked kind of a speech, and then Steve Carell being like, no, no, we're not. And I'm a 40-year-old man speaking at this small 8th grade graduation. I couldn't cringe hard enough, right? And that's tough. That's tough to like really feel like in a movie that's so clever, they just kind of resorted to cheesiness in the very end. So that's kind of a tough pill for me to swallow. And that's really the end of my complaints. Now, that being all said, I think that the reveal scene, the twist scene that we've already gone on and talked about at length is so good that it kind of bandages that for me. Like I go away from this movie feeling like, oh man, it's just still a clever, good, charming movie every time. In spite of the last approximately 10 minutes not really doing anything for me, which speaks to how good those first 100 and something are.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in terms of the ending scene, and maybe we're like stepping on the last Cal's toes a little bit, but I think that they could have...
We're going to go in depth.
Yeah.
On last call.
I think that they could have, after that scene where... they have the surprise reveal, and then, like you said, after Ryan Gosling tries to make amends sort of with Cal and reach out to him, I think they could have finished it up with like a scene where they're all getting together for a birthday party or something, and Cal's the only one who's not there, but then he decides to come and like all is forgiven and they connect as a family, like something like that. I mean, sure, that still would have been cheesy, but it wouldn't seem as drawn out and put as, like you said, that whole scene at the school graduation, because none of that really seems like that clever, like you said, or that interesting, because the whole movie doesn't have to be clever, like even if they just wrapped it up with a pretty bow or something, but maybe more quickly they should have done it. But like you said, we'll talk about it when we get to the ending discussion. That's a good point, though, I think.
I appreciate it. What about your second shot?
So my second shot is about Steve Carell's character, Cal. We already talked a little bit about him being kind of clueless.
And not to be confused with the 90s film of the same name.
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about Steve Carell's career in terms of his roles. And I think, you know, his acting range, because it's very interesting. Like, I feel like he does two very different types of comedy whenever he is in a comedic role. It's either he's Michael Scott from The Office, which is just, he plays like this extreme character who's just like absurd and literally no self-awareness, or he plays average Joe who gets into funny situations. Like in this, he plays your average Joe, middle-aged guy who, you know, gets into funny situations, Cal. And then he also plays that same kind of character, I would argue, in 40-Year-Old Virgin. Like, his character in 40-Year-Old Virgin is not that different from his character in this, I want to feel like, other than, of course, the obvious differences of having a family and all of that stuff. But in 40-Year-Old Virgin, I feel like the persona that he takes on, kind of the, like, a little bit, you know, kind of nerdy almost. I hate to use that word because I myself am a nerd, but, you know, the stereotypical nerdy, you know, I guess guy who maybe isn't always clued in on all the social situations of what you should be doing, you know, like, I feel like his character in that and his character in this movie are very similar. He's also been in some other roles where he plays kind of like your average Joe character who the comedy is built around that, whereas his character in The Office, he is the comedy. Like, the absurdity that he brings is the comedic parts of it, you know? And so I just think that it's very interesting how he can play to these very two different types of comedy roles, whereas a lot of comedians, they play one type of comedy and that's it. Like, their character on SNL becomes their character in every movie that they ever star in, right? But the fact that Steve Carell can go and play Cal and then, or go and play Michael Scott and then go and play, like, quote, normal guy, Cal, or more normal guy in 40-Year-Old Virgin with, you know, she just hasn't had sex, I guess, is very interesting to me. And then, of course, he can also play dramatic roles too. But I just thought, especially the fact that he can play these two different types of comedic roles and do really well in both, speaks to how in tune he is with his own acting chops and understanding of the kind of personas that he can bring to the table.
I think I agree with you for sure on the dramatic stuff. I mean, I think that's what kind of sets Carell apart, is that, you know, he makes Oscar plays sometimes, you know, like Foxcatcher, Big Short, you know, he'll be in something that is definitely not going for comedy, although sometimes, you know, in the case of Big Short, his character has some funny one-liners. And I think that is definitely what sets him apart. I think it's interesting that you think that he can also vary it up with his comedic roles, because I feel like, me personally, he's in that same vein of, you know, Paul Rudd, Will Ferrell, I'm just naming Anchorman, Oscars, Vince Vaughn, you know, comedic actors who especially made it big in the, like, late 90s, early 2000s, where sometimes, in some cases, the SNL character becomes their comedic persona, you know, and they just kind of do variations on that. But I think that, you know, that's okay. And that, like, that's kind of why I kind of revere some of those movies, is just because, oh, this is Will Ferrell doing absurd news reporter, or this is the comedy brand known as Will Ferrell doing disgruntled stepbrother, or race car driver, or more recently, Eurovision Song Contest participant, right? And I feel like Steve Carell, you know, I'm thinking of, like, other movies he's done where it's like Get Smart, A Date Night, you know, other comic roles. He's basically playing a similar character to this one and, you know, to the other ones. But I still think that he's so good at that, that he owns that. Like, that's his brand. Other comedians or comic actors that want to do something similar would have to struggle to like find their own brand. You know, they'd have to be like a Kevin Hart. They'd have to be a Vince Vaughn. They'd have, if they want to be movie star household name level, you know, you have to kind of carve out your own sort of brand. But again, I think what sets Steve Carell apart is that he's also willing to venture into that dramatic stuff too, and his and showcase his other acting chops, because I think he's legitimately good in some of those things.
All right. I'm going to argue with you on this.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, he does dramatic roles and he does different kinds of comedy, though. Like, I agree with you. In most movies he's in, he plays the same character over and over again, basically. But you cannot sit here with a straight face and tell me that Cal in this movie is very similar and he plays it the same way as he plays Michael Scott.
I think that the only difference between this guy and Michael Scott is that Michael Scott is like confidently a fool, but Cal is like unconfidently a fool.
Right.
And but they're both fools.
But so is every comedic role ever. Every comedian it has plays a fool, deprecates the court jester. Like, yeah, but in these movies, he tones it down to like a average Joe, I'm just your normal guy who's kind of a fool. Whereas Michael Scott is somebody that's like completely absurd. Like if you were to meet them, you'd be like, whoa, like who the hell is this guy? Like if he was at your corporate meeting or whatever and just started saying some of the shit that he says, it's so outlandish and so crazy that I feel like when Steve Carell plays him, he literally has to get into this mindset of like not only a fool, but like a child or like someone who's just a satire in itself. Like he's not even a real character. Like Michael Scott is just like a satire of real people.
Maybe I feel that way. Maybe I feel like they're not too far apart because obviously Cal Weaver is not a satire. He's a realized character based on probably somebody that Dan Fogelman, the writer of the film, knew or whatever, or his experiences. And I think the, you know, the more and more I've worked in corporate America, the more I realize Michael Scott is less of a satire and more of an actual type of person.
No, I think he is a satire of a real type of person. But I mean, literally every scene he's in, he's saying like extreme absurd things. And that is not what how Steve Carell plays Cal. Cal literally comes to realizations about himself and the world. From scene to scene, he's like constantly kind of thinking about things and realizing, oh, I messed up or, oh, I should play. Like even the scene where he's playing baseball with his son, he's like relatively normal in that scene. Like if Michael Scott had a son and he was playing baseball, he, you know, you could just imagine the kind of shenanigans that would happen if that was an office scene.
Yeah,
I think I disagree with what you said, but I can't even find common ground between this, but
you don't think the scene where he's like, she spit in that. Yep, she spit in that. You know, that's not like a Michael Scottism.
No, Michael Scott would not say something like that. Michael Scott would still be flirting with the bar. He would be trying to flirt with the bartender. He would not even be aware that she spit in it. That would be part of the joke because oftentimes Michael Scott's not in on the joke on The Office. The joke
We're
is about him.
Alienating our non-Office fans so hard right now.
They don't exist. No, I'm just kidding. No, if you're not an Office fan, it's okay. No, I'm just kidding. but I think that this take that you have that somehow Steve Carell playing Michael Scott is the same as him playing these other characters where he's like way toned down in these other movies is very wrong. So
all right, well, we don't always have to agree, but you know what we can agree on? My third shot, which is, how fucking great is Marissa Tomei in this movie?
Yeah, she's great.
Oh my God. She has what, like less than 5 minutes of screen time? And she is just absolutely firing on all cylinders. I mean, hot take. I think she is Robbie's teacher reveal might be slightly better than the end reveal, the end twist about Hannah and Jacob. Because I think that they do such a good job of presenting both Cal and Emily as people who are like, you know, not in a good place. And, you know, Cal, despite the fact that he's had this rebound and, you know, started to become this womanizer a la Jacob, has really not been fulfilled by it. And you can tell that by the way he's speaking with his wife, you know. And then Julianne Moore being Julianne Moore is giving an incredible performance as usual. We haven't even talked about Julianne Moore because, you know, she, I think she has like probably the smallest amount of screen time of all of the main characters, right? I'm as opposed to the Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling, and Steve Carell characters. Mm-hmm. I think she's the next build, even though I think on the movie poster, she's billed ahead of Emma Stone because Emma Stone hadn't really popped off yet at this point in time. But Julianne Moore is an American treasure. I mean, she's just great in anything.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're going to talk about her a bit more next week. Hint, hint. But I think that, yeah, just two really good actors kind of just playing off each other in that scene in the hallway right before, boom, you open the door. Turns out that Kate is Robbie's teacher and the woman that Steve Carell first picked up from the bar. And oh my gosh, that scene where she's like, I've never seen somebody just scribble like the word asshole in perfect cursive on a chalkboard so well. Like she's shaking while she
How
does
many
it.
People have you seen scribble the word asshole on a board?
I mean, I did a few bouts in ISS, you know. I've seen some
ISS.
In school suspension. You
oh
know?
God. I was a goody two-shoes. I didn't even know what that means.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When you're at ISS, you don't get those cool dry erase whiteboards. You get that chalkboard,
oh,
you know?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, exactly. Public school, baby.
I went to a public school.
Well, did you have blackboards?
No, we had...
Yeah, exactly.
We had whiteboards.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Must be nice. But anyways, yeah, so, I mean, just she's vibrating with, like, just... And then she's like, why don't you let your husband tell you how we know each other? And Carell's delivery of, she's an alcoholic. Oh my God. That's like, I laugh so hard every single time just because of how absurd it is that he thinks that he can get out of this, that he thinks there's still a way for me to talk my way out of this. And there is absolutely not. He's got to, you know, take the consequences of his actions and does because he ends up alienating his wife. Which he was just starting to get back in good with and obviously makes a fool of himself in front of the rest of the parent.
Yeah, so I think that she is amazing in this. Like you said, she's really funny. And I also kind of like how you were nitpicking about the beginning, like where all this could have been solved if someone just said one thing. I feel like this is one of those scenes where it's not said because it's funny and that's why they didn't say it. But if he would have just clarified that he is like separated from his wife, but not divorced or not even just called her his wife. Like if they're separated realistically, he wouldn't be like, oh, this is Emily, my wife. He would have been like, this is Emily, mother to my children, or this is Emily, you know, my ex or however you would say it. But
yeah,
I mean, I don't think he would necessarily in that moment say this is my wife because that has a connotation that they're like really stuck
still
glued together.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, here I am making the other argument against myself. I could see how someone might argue that he was so nervous in that moment that he just blurted out, this is my wife.
I think that and also I read it as, after that conversation they have where he's like, you really hurt me, but I do want to fight for you kind of conversation that they have in the hallway outside the classroom. I think he legitimately was thinking like, okay, if I can just get through this parent-teacher conference at the end of it, I can start to rekindle things with
Emily. That's right. I forgot about that scene. And I think that's like, yeah, that's another thing that like, that's true. That element of them discussing before and having kind of a heart-to-heart probably makes him think that maybe we can get back together, so he doesn't want to introduce her as his ex-wife. So yeah, I think that makes a little bit more sense. I forgot that every time that, you know, he progresses or you think something's good's gonna happen, they throw like some comedic bit, which is the same thing with the scene at the end where he makes the mini golf course for her and then that goes to shit because Jacob shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree. I think Marissa Tomei plays a she's like such a great actress that it's a shame that she only has like a minor role in this, but she plays the heck out of like, and I think a lot of great comedy like ensembles,
yeah,
cast,
ensemble cast,
they often do that where they take really famous actors and actresses and just give them like a bit part because it's kind of fun because you're like, oh my gosh, that's that famous person, it's like a cameo, but they also get to do something really funny in it, so yeah. I think that's kind of like what she does in this one.
At this point in time, she is the only person with an Academy Award in the cast. and, you know, rightfully so, because her performance in My Cousin Vinny is an all-time great performance.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to shout her out because she's great in this one. Shout out Aunt May, for those of you guys who don't know who Marissa Tomei is and are on the younger side of our listenership.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't have known who she was unless my name wasn't also Marissa, because anyone that I introduce myself to that is over the age of, I would say 50 now, but who was born, you know, in that time frame or before, anybody over the, whenever I say, oh, you know, hello, my name is Marissa, they always go, oh, like Marissa Tomei?
Yeah.
That's a common reaction I get. So I had to figure out who she was. Because when I was younger, of course, I was like, oh, a little kid, I didn't know who that was. I was just like, yeah, I like her. And nice. Then when I discovered that she was, you know, a great actress, I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah. I had a similar experience with the starfish from SpongeBob.
Oh, so. Yeah. Well, I bet you knew who he was, though, when people said, oh, like.
Patrick. Yeah. Yeah, that's how I introduce myself now.
Yeah, it's a good memory device for people to remember your name. Although I don't know how they could ever forget you.
Aw.
Yeah, so whose shot are we on?
This is your last shot.
Okay. So my last shot is just going to be kind of about how I like how this movie deals with some heart-to-heart stuff, you know, like some family issues, and then also the kids, and how, you know, it covers a lot of ground when you think about it, because it's covering the ground of Steve Carell being middle-aged. It covers the ground of his wife, Emily, kind of realizing she's going through a midlife crisis, and then how that affects her relationship with her husband, which you don't often see in movies. And then you get the relationship, you know, seeing Hannah kind of go through this adult stuff and kind of figuring out what she wants in a romantic partner. You get Jacob going through this sort of transformation from kind of maturing in a different way than Cal. And then you get, you know, even the kids like Robbie kind of reacting almost to what's going on with his family situation. And, you know, he's getting let down by his crush. So he's like, man, love sucks. But then also he's seeing what his parents are going through. So he's like, man, love really does suck. And all those things are playing off each other at the same time that you're having this comedy. And I feel like it's hard to juggle all of those things already, but to mix in the sort of drama elements with the comedy. Usually I'm not a huge fan of dramedies, as we have discussed on this podcast. But I actually think it works really well in this movie because the drama is kind of subtle. Like, it's just kind of in there just so slightly, the family issues and the family dynamic stuff. And it's not until you've watched it a few times where I think I really even pay attention to it, because I'm so focused on the comedy, you know, probably the first couple of times I watched this movie. But now that, you know, it's become one of my go-tos, I'm more focused on the other elements of it. And I think that it does it in such a unique way, and it reminds me of like another movie that Patrick knows that I like that isn't as funny. It's not as much as
Heat.
No. No. Although I could probably draw some comparison, but it's not as much a comedy, but it's got this sort of family dynamic element in some comedic parts, and that's Stuck in Love, which is kind of like an indie family movie, or not family movie, it's about a grown adult family of all adults. But
you do love that movie.
I think it's both of these kind of strike chords with me, because I think it's like a big cast, right, and they kind of handle all these delicate issues within the family, but you're kind of interested as a story, the characters go along, but at the end, you know, it's got like a lot of sweet moments too, and it's got that sort of touch of sweetness. And I think that both of these movies kind of have that going for it and make them sort of unique in the comedy and drama realms.
I think that's what makes this movie interesting for sure. I mean, more than just like a straight comedy, that it's able to like hit all those comedic chords for me. You know, it's funny because we're coming at this from like two different ways. I think that you love the dramedy aspects because they strike chords with you. And then it happens to be like really funny on top of that. And then I feel like I just wanted it to be something funny, but then was pleasantly surprised when I found that it was also like, yeah, some of those messages and familial themes are like kind of resonant as well. Not that I identify with these characters, but just the fact that, you know, it's a very realistic situation, and the family dynamic of like everybody working out their differences at the end is a pretty good message. But we can get more into that in Last Call. So I definitely agree. That's what makes this movie so fun to discuss and definitely fun to drink vodka cranberries with, because it makes all the jokes even more funnier. Matter of fact, I'm going to need a refill here soon. Jeez. Blew through that. So we've talked about our top three things that we needed to discuss regarding Crazy Stupid Love. And if you're still with us, then why don't we talk about the end of this movie in Last Call? All right, time for Last Call, where we discuss the ends of movies, why they end certain ways, and most importantly of all, where does the ending really begin? Luckily, I think this is kind of the clearest cut ending we've done in a while. The end scene is pretty easily demarcated by the end of the speech, you know? They all go outside and
that indie music starts playing.
Oh my gosh.
Ah, yeah. Do you remember that time like 10 years ago where every song was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Like that was like every song that was popular. Whoa.
Yeah. And because of that, it's very clear that that's what the end of the movie is. And it's with Robbie staring at his parents, who seem to be, you know, on the verge of getting back together. It's a very uplifting kind of note that is supremely undercut, in my opinion, by the fact that a girl who's about to become a legal adult gives a child her nudes, which is played for a joke, but definitely not the most well-aging part of this whole thing.
Right. It's pretty gross. Like if it was reverse, yeah, it would be like, oh yeah, we can't put that in the movie, but
right,
because she's a girl and he's a guy, it goes into, or boy, it goes into that like, oh, little boy with the older woman, ha ha ha, but really it's just gross.
It's yeah, pretty gross, right? And so yeah, they try to like be like, whoa, yeah, crazy teenagehood, oh, uncertainty, but whimsical smile at the end.
Yeah, I feel like they could have had the same effect of like, they don't even need to bring up like, oh, I'll look like my dad and or the nudes or anything. Obviously, they don't need to bring that in. They could have just had him and Jessica, you know, share a laugh or a hug or something and move on. Like they don't need this weird.
But they frame scene. It the way they frame it, like it's all of a sudden this art house film of like, yeah, they zoom in on her and yeah, she's like in slow motion.
It's creepy. Whoa.
Like they really try to like romanticize the Robbie Jessica,
yeah,
future relationship,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's not good. I agree. I think they could have just done without that and just had the focus be on Cal and Emily, where Emily says, like, I'm really glad that you bought me that ice cream or whatever she says. They could have kind of focused on that.
Yeah. And this comes after, like, you know, as I was alluding to in one of my shots, the speech that Robbie starts to give at his eighth grade graduation, where he, you know, the whole situation is pretty absurd because you've got this 14-year-old salutatorian, right? Also, side note, what eighth grade class has a freaking salutatorian?
Yeah, I don't remember if I even had like a ceremony.
Exactly. And so, I mean, for reference, you don't remember if you had a ceremony. The only ceremonious thing that I remember happening at my eighth grade last day was that my boy Max got a shout out from the vice principal. So shout out Max. He knows who he is. Let's say that it's absurd. It's a dumb, archaic practice, and there's no need for it at
really?
All.
Really? I think it's newer, this like idea of kindergarten graduations, eighth grade graduations. Like before, it used to be like you just graduate from high school and that was it. But now it's like these like hipster parents are like, let's give
graduations
like so old,
to everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I guess you're right about that. It probably wasn't really a thing back in the day, but I already feel like it's aged badly and it's kind of pointless to do that. Speaking as somebody who was in eighth grade. Now, I'm not a parent. If you're a parent listening to this show, feel free to weigh in on whether or not you think there's value to graduating every grade level, right? Prior to 12th grade. But certainly this one seems kind of, you know, superfluous to say the least, right? But then you've got the speech that he gives where apparently you don't need to stick to any sort of script. You can just freeball it and just start talking about how I was in love once, and love's a sham. Love's the stupidest thing you could do. And then apparently another thing that you can do is if you're a parent, you can just grab the mic. Yeah. Which is exactly what Cal does.
Honestly, I'm not as shocked by that because I've seen some pretty bad graduation speeches, and even those were at college. So I'm sure if you're an eighth grader, you could get away with something. I think the principal would come up more quickly, but they probably give them a little bit of leeway. But like you said, they probably have them like submit the speech ahead of time. But, you know, in the moment, if you're a crafty eighth grader, you could just throw that all to the side and say whatever you want. And I think that's what Robbie did.
Yeah, I it's just it's such a dissonant note from like the rest of the film being so, you know, kind of pitch perfect in some places that it sticks out like sore thumb. So then, yeah, we're gonna end on the dissonant note of how does that indie song go?
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, and it could be any song.
It's just say whoa a bunch of times or yeah a bunch of times.
Yeah.
'Cause like it's always or whistle like. Like there's a lot of whistling. Yes, there were so many songs like that where it's just like
I think that was Whistle by Flo Rida.
We're all gonna put our hands in the air and back and forth. Whoa, we're all gonna wear like wind blowing tops and play out in the grass at the music festivals. I mean, that still happens. Well, not this year or last year, but yeah, I feel like there's a lot of whoa, 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 whoa.
The song that we are talking about, by the way, is called "Blood" by the band The Middle East.
You know, the thing is, I make fun of it as much as I do, like I just did, in that whole era of songs that sound like that, but I actually like jam to it. I'm like, yeah. I can jam to a whoa, whoa, because it just gets me in the spirit. I'm like, yeah, life is good. We can all be a butterfly.
It's the true reason you actually love these movies.
Floating around.
Is because you had the soundtrack on your old
whoa,
iPod
whoa,
Touch.
Whoa, 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 yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah, of course I did. All these movies, right? Of course I did. So,
so not even trying to deny
I'm
it.
Making fun of myself when I say that every song I listened to the last, you know.
It's all right. You know, I mean, I had a Good Charlotte CD in my car.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't really say anything. I have no ground to stand on. All right. Before we embarrass ourselves further, we're going to go ahead and end the discussion of Crazy Stupid Love and the ending. Yeah. You could probably put that song in there too and it'd be fine.
Any whistling, any whoas, you know, just anything that sounds like you're like folding laundry outside with an IPA in one hand, petting your dog with the other hand, like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's it. That is to say, I'm so glad you bought me that ice cream.
No. Me too. I'm glad that I bought you ice cream. I'm glad you've bought me ice cream. We just had a cookie dough Oreo ice cream the other day. That was really good.
That's the last line of the movie.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
I know. I got your joke.
Okay.
Oh. I was just
okay. I'll cut that part out.
I was going off of it.
Okay. No one cares what kind of ice cream we're looking at.
Maybe they do.
I'm going to cut it at me too, because that's the last line. Anyways, thank you all for listening. If you like what you heard and want to tell us how you did or how we can improve.
Or if you want to say where you stand on the Steve Carell debate, does he play different characters in his movies than when he plays Michael Scott on The Office? The answer is obviously yes. You can email us.
Okay. All right. Well, the email address in question is momixpod@gmail.com, momixpod@gmail.com, or shoot us a message on Instagram @momixpod. Again, same with Facebook. And, you know, write into the show or tell us how we did on an Apple Podcast review. Give us 5 stars if you're so inclined. I mean, you don't even have to say anything. The 5 stars are great. And don't give us less than 5. That would bum us out. But 5 is a great round
number.
Unless
you really feel like we deserve it.
Even then, just give us 5 anyway, right? But yeah, that's how you can support the show. And next week, for your consideration, I alluded to this earlier, we're going to be talking some more Julianne Moore, because it's time to finally do another long requested drink and movie. The White Russian from The Big Lebowski. We're finally going to do it. We're going to tackle the Coens, two of our favorite filmmakers, because they are brothers. And I'm just so excited to talk about the dude,
yeah,
among other things.
It's going to be great. And the older you get, you know, I feel like the more dudes you meet in real life.
I'm going to become one. That's the goals for me.
Yeah.
So. I have a movie mixology podcast. Of course, I'm going to become the dude. So. High aspirations all around. Thank you guys again for listening. And until next time.
Whoa. Whoa. Whoa.